This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to KUCI.org. This is the In the Garden Show, produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I am Ann Liu, your host for the hour. This week's topics is Backyard Chickens, Part 2. My guests are Terry Vargas and Lindsay Kube. Thank you for coming back to the station, Terry and Lindsay.
Thanks for having us, Ann.
We're excited to be here.
The last interview I had with you was so successful. So many questions and comments came back to our organization that we thought we would continue Backyard Chickens, because the topic is very pertinent for anyone out there who loves to eat eggs, right?
Yes, people are very excited to be a part of this movement.
Now, I call Terry and Lindsay my girls because they call their chickens their girls. They have plenty of girls in their home, more than 20 in fact, and they have been taking care of chickens since forever. They are the girls we go to in Orange County when we want any kind of speaker for our speakers organization out in Centennial Farm or anywhere in the county. They come out with their girls in their car and show off their girls and talk all about the care of chickens. And so rather than you having to go out to Centennial Farms today, we're going to treat you to listening to what they have to say just by you with turning on the radio. I'm so glad you're here. Now, let's start off with just a short review of what we covered in Backyard Chickens Part 1, because the podcast is accessible to the general public. In part one, we talked about care for chickens a little bit, care for eggs a little bit. We talked about heirloom and hybrid chickens a little bit, the benefits of chickens, how they are helpful in a garden, since this is a In the Garden Show. This is how chickens are beneficial in the garden. We talked about it a little bit. So you can see that we did an overview of chickens in Backyard Chickens Part 1. We want to go more in depth in this interview. So let's begin with care of chickens. Terry, how much time does it take to care for your 20 chickens? How much does it cost? What temperatures do you have to provide them? All that sort of thing. Just go with it, Terry.
Okay. Depending on how social you want your chickens to be with you, how friendly you want them to be, will determine how much time you will spend with your chickens. If you just want them for eggs, and if you don't really care if they are interactive with you, then, you know, you can spend about 5-10 minutes a day, you know, to make sure that they have their food, their water, and that they're clean and not have
that's
any kind of
all
issues.
5-10 minutes
well,
a day?
Well, like I said, Ann, that's the bare minimum. That's provided that there are certain things that are set up where they could have like a continuous feeder where you don't have to use a lot of time or water, and also the way you set up their litter can help to minimize the time that you really need to spend with them. They don't require a lot of maintenance.
Well, let's clarify, where are they? Are they free range walking about the garden, or are they in a coop where you can don't need to go out there except for 5-10 minutes a day?
Well, they are in a coop at night, but during the day they free range. And in their coop area, we have straw as their bedding, several inches of straw that helps to absorb their fecal material.
So when you remove the straw, mm-hmm. that's actually good. You can compost that, right?
Yes, that's actually very good. It's very high in nitrogen, and that's excellent for our garden to help the plants grow.
And you said in the last interview that this fecal material can be aged in compost and can add nitrogen to the soil.
Yes.
So if someone is cleaning their chicken, the straw, you just refresh the whole thing, you rake it all up and put it into the compost pile? Is that the right way to do it?
That's correct, Anne. That's how you
I
could
see.
Do it. If you spend more time with them, obviously they're going to be friendlier. And like, for example, with our girls, we can pick them up very easily. Other people can pick them up and handle them. And as a matter of fact, we were just at the UCI Arboretum. People were able to hold them and take pictures with them. They were posing for selfies. It was very exciting.
I can't help but ask this silly question. You know how cats have attitude? Do chickens have attitude?
Chickens definitely have attitude. They have their own personality. So they're very, that's like one of the reasons why you would want to have chickens is that they're very entertaining. They're fun to watch. As a matter of fact, I remember reading an article one time about this man that had a home office, and he had his coop built right outside his window so he could observe his girls while he was working during the day. And he said that it was, for him, it was very relaxing, and it just helped to make the day go much smoother for him.
And even when the chickens see you, do they run up and do they recognize you?
They do. They're very intelligent. They're able to recognize 100 faces, yours included. In addition to all the other girls in the coop, they're able to recognize the faces. And so if you're the one that goes and spends time with them and feeds them and interacts with them, they definitely are able to identify you over another person.
And they do get excited to see you too, that's for sure.
It's a real fallacy then, bird brain.
Oh, to be called a bird brain is actually a compliment.
Really?
Yes.
Can you tell me a funny story about an intelligent chicken experience?
Well, we taught one of our chickens how to go in and out of the doggy door, and she learned faster than the dog and the cat did. So it got to the point where she'd start walking in whenever she wanted to, that we had to close the little doggy door latch parts. Otherwise, she would come in whenever she wanted. And then she started knocking on the sliding door because she wanted to come in. And we had to put a stop to that really fast.
I had no idea.
We had to remind her, Anne, that she was a chicken and the chickens belong outside. Although I must tell you that there are some people that do keep their chickens indoors, and they do have chicken diapers for that.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's very common.
I knew some fun things would come out of part two.
We don't have chicken diapers for our girls, but we have dresses for them.
You dress them up.
Sometimes.
It's the only dressing chickens like.
The only dressings chickens like. Okay, you were talking about chickens needing minimal care, 5 to 10 minutes a day, if you can resist their charm, right?
Exactly.
And if you have a very busy life, it's actually possible for someone who has a very busy schedule to fit in having chickens. Now, is it better to have more than two, or is it possible just to have one chicken? Is it healthy to just have one chicken?
Well, chickens are social animals, so you want to have at least two. Unless you want to be spending all your time with the chicken. So you want to have a minimum of two so they can keep each other company.
Unless you're going to be spending all your time with your one chicken, you really need to make sure that you have at least the two chickens to keep each other company. They're very social.
And does it matter if it's a young and old, or old and old, or young and young, the ages?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't necessarily matter in that sense. If it's a chick, you don't want it to be with a grown hen, because she can either hurt the chick or kill it without even really meaning to, or even meaning to at that point.
Okay, but let's review again what a chick is. Is it less than 6 weeks? What do you mean by chicks, young chicks?
You
not
can have
being
a
with?
Chick that's just hatched, so it's got that down feathers, okay, and then it goes into what's called a growing chick. So it gets a little older, but it's not quite what the next stage of bird would be called, a pullet. The pullet is a young female chicken that is less than a year old. She may or may not be laying, but she's referred to as a pullet.
So are pullets compatible with a mature hen?
They can be, but first I want to say that once that pullet has been laying for about 6 months, then she's considered a hen. So at about a year, they're considered a hen.
I see.
Now, if you were to put pullets with hens, the hens were very likely to want to dominate those pullets. And so they're going to establish what is called their hierarchy, the pecking order you've heard of.
Yes.
That's
so it's true.
A reality, definitely.
What would it do?
Well, it would assert herself with the bird, and she would display body language by giving her certain looks, showing her or redirecting her away from the food when she wants it. The dominant hens are the ones, the dominant birds are the ones that get first choice of territory and feed and water and so forth. So they have ways of letting the other birds know that they are in charge and they will not let them forget it.
Oh, very similar to other animals in the animal kingdom.
Correct.
When they show dominance and territory.
Yes.
I see. I don't think I want to be a little chicken.
Yeah, well, that's why it's best to put the ages. You want to be able to put the birds together when they're able to defend themselves.
Can a hen be so aggressive that it would kill the other chicken?
Yes. They will resort to cannibalism.
Oh,
they,
tell me
they
about
can.
That.
There's different types of pecking. There is a sharp peck to the head. The chicken will extend her neck up, raise it, and so that she can peck hard down on a sharp pecking downward on the chicken to let them know that that's their aggressive peck.
So usually the peck is on top of the other's head.
Aggressive. That's the aggressive peck.
Not the peck is usually aimed at the head, not the body.
There are other types of pecking that are aimed at the body, but those are not aggressive, usually not aggressive pecks. That tends to be behavior that comes from, I guess for lack of a better way to describe it, is from the chickens being bored. So that's why it's important when you're feeding the girls to put their food out so that they can scratch for it, they can work for it.
Oh, to keep them busy.
Now, exactly.
I remember in part one you talked about not only is the scratching something they need to do, biologically, that's their
they spend most
instinct.
Of their yes, most of their time is spent scratching.
And it also helps the garden, the soil.
Yes,
it sure does. That is beneficial.
Yes. Especially if you have weeds, they can get rid of the weeds.
Or really hard compacted soil. They'll help take care of that for you without you having to do all the work.
Great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we covered pecking order and keeping peace among the poultry. And needing at least two.
Okay. Also, I wanted to mention, too, that high light intensity can actually aggravate feather pecking. So you want to minimize that. There are some people that put artificial lighting in their coops so that the hens can lay more eggs. And that can create stress in the birds, which will let me back up a little bit. Chickens need 14 to 16 hours of light per day to produce an egg.
Wow.
So when you have spring and summertime, they're going to be producing more eggs than in the fall and the winter time.
Interesting.
And so some people tend to want to put an artificial lighting to stimulate that egg production, and so you just want to make sure that you the hen, they need to rest. They need a chance a process called molting, where they release their feathers and they grow new feathers, and during that time they are not producing eggs, so they need that. That's biologically necessary for them to go through that.
How interesting. How often do the chickens molt?
About once a year.
Once a year, and it's usually during the darker season?
Yes, usually around fall time, although you'll have some birds that will, I've seen it where they molt in late, or I guess like around July, August, but The better producers are the ones that go through what's called a fast molt. They don't look very pretty because they look like they're naked. They drop most of their feathers, as opposed to a slow molt. A slow molt, they'll just drop a few feathers. The fast molter birds will get back into laying eggs much quicker.
I didn't realize that chickens are more productive in seasons with more light. I would think that that would reflect in the cost of eggs, but I don't see that change. It's like gasoline, you know, when there is more in supply and demand. Do you see a change in cost of eggs because they're less productive?
We haven't purchased eggs in so long. we don't take a look at that. But have you noticed, Lindsay?
I haven't noticed either. But like Terry said, is that usually people will use artificial lighting to keep the eggs more. To keep the chickens more productive. So that might be why we don't see the difference in the cost at the stores, is because they're using the artificial lighting to keep the chickens productive year-round.
And like in part one, you talked about reading the numbers on the egg carton that tell the source of where those eggs come from and when those eggs were packed. Eggs are maybe packed the productive period? They pack them to carry over the low productive times?
I don't know whether that's...
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But remember that in the commercial industry, when they have... They are using the artificial lighting, so they're not dependent on the seasons to determine whether there's going to be enough lighting or not.
Now, that brings into a question concern about how chickens are treated humanely. Do you want to address that a minute?
Well, that's one of the reasons that we want to have chickens, and I'm sure a lot of people out there want to, for their gardens, that they're going to help to minimize the pesticides and the herbicides and so forth. Is another one is that you know how your girls are being treated. You know that they're being treated in a humane way because you're going to be, you know, they're sentient beings, so you want to take care of them as best as you can. You know what they're eating. And you don't always, that's not always true in other settings. If you provide a substrate that they can scratch around in, like rice hulls, or we like to use straw. There's some people use sawdust.
Wood chips
and sawdust. The thing that I would recommend, though, is that if you do use, for example, the sawdust, that you use the sawdust that's come from wood that hasn't been treated with chemicals. There's heat-treated wood that you can use, and so we just prefer not to expose our girls to toxins. You know, we like to feed them organically and give them the best care that we possibly can.
This is an ideal situation for chickens, what you're providing. They need space. They need light. They don't need pressure to continuously produce lots of eggs.
We want to give them an opportunity to allow their body to rest. They're not machines, and so and we don't want to treat them that way. So we want to give them as natural an environment as possible. And just like us, we can't work 24/7. We need time to rest so that we can perform more productively and be the best that we can be. The girls also need their time as well.
Now, I remember Lindsay in part one talked about municipal codes, what cities allow for having chickens and such. Maybe we should just review that in case people out there don't remember and would like, again, a real quick refresher on how one would find out whether or not their city allows chickens.
Okay, yeah. So some of the websites that we like to look at is called municode.com, and that goes over a few of the different municipal codes that are available out there online. Another one is findlaw.com, And then also, of course, just contacting your city directly. They will be able to tell you, you know, can you have chickens, how many, what the guidelines are. But you can also, if you don't want to go through the city and find out, you can look at one of those sites and see.
And I imagine what's really critical is how your neighbors feel.
Yes, yes. Right? So even though your city says you can have chickens, ultimately, if you're being a nuisance to the community, even though your municipal code says you can have chickens, if you're being a nuisance, then they can ask you to get rid of your chickens. So you always want to be a responsible pet owner, and that's with any pet. And if your neighbor has concerns about stuff, have an open communication with them and address their concerns. If they, you know, if they're worried about noise or smell or whatever, invite them over to your place and they can see how your chickens are kept and how clean they are. And that way they can see for themselves and not be so afraid of what they may have heard. A lot of times when we bring our girls places, people are like, oh, but aren't they noisy and smelly? And we point to them and say, okay, do these look like they're being noisy? Do they smell or anything? And they're like, no, they're really quiet. They're just scratching around looking for food. And that's a good opportunity to tell people, no, if you give your chickens anything that they need, which is food, water, you know, and they're happy, they're not going to be making noise. It's just like anybody or any pet. If, you know, if a dog wants attention, it's going to bark. Stuff like that. You need to just make sure that you're being a responsible pet owner in that sense.
And you spoke about how much this brings your community together, not only your neighborhood, but your family.
Oh, yeah. No, our neighbors, we've met a lot of our neighbors now because of the chickens. We found out a lot of our neighbors have chickens. So it's a really great little community. And everyone gets excited to hear when you have chickens. They're like, well, we have chickens too. What kind do you have? And we like to compare stories and fun stuff. And it's
part
really
of your family.
They are. Yes.
One thing that we like to suggest to people is that share the eggs with your neighbors.
Ah.
If there are concerns, as soon as they have those homegrown eggs, they will want the chickens to stay.
Yes. Homegrown eggs, I can taste the difference. It's just such a richer taste. When I was in Vietnam, I knew those were free-range, homegrown eggs that we were eating, and I said to my husband, these eggs are just wonderful. I had to have eggs every day. And here I don't have eggs every day because I hear of the cholesterol and everything. But Lindsay, you told me about the yolk, right? About the cholesterol?
Yes, and it's good cholesterol. It's not the bad cholesterol. So if you're going to eat any type of cholesterol at all, eat the egg yolks.
So give up the hamburger and
exactly, and eat a few eggs.
Yeah. The only vitamin that you cannot get from the egg is the vitamin C. But all the other nutrients you can get from those eggs. So they are truly a dynamo package.
And I think your eggs would be the best because you know what you're feeding those chickens. And it was so interesting how you said that the chickens just biologically or physiologically go for the foods that their bodies are lacking.
They sense. They're able to sense which vitamin that they're lacking. And so they are able to go to that particular food to fill that need. So I think that's fabulous. And maybe we can do that too. We've just forgotten.
Let's go back to costs of having chickens. Now, I don't think everyone out there wants to own chickens, but we're having this show because if listeners out there understand the work behind producing eggs, or if you're receiving eggs from a neighbor who does have chickens, just understanding more what people are doing with chickens helps us to understand our lives a little bit better. What is the cost of having chickens?
Well, the biggest cost is going to be the cost of the coop, especially if you were to buy one or have one custom made. That can be the greatest cost. And then, of course, on the short-term basis. And long-term, it would be the care of the chickens, which is the feed. That's going to be the greatest cost. One thing that I do want to say, though, is to connect this to the eggs, and that is, if you want those, you talked about having those eggs in Vietnam, one of the things that we're able to notice in our eggs from our girls is that the yolk is like a deep orange, borderline red. You don't get that in the store eggs. So if you want those at home, you want to give your girls grasses, lettuces, greens, so that
greens.
They can eat.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what is the chemical again?
Xenophyll.
Xenophyll.
I think it was. Top of my head, trying to remember.
And that chemical is good for us as well, right?
It is. It's very good for us.
Oh, very good.
So some of the initial costs when you're getting ready to have chickens, like Terry said, was having the coop. If you're really handy, we recommend making your own coop. That ends up making the cost significantly less. So if you have someone that's handy that can make it for you, you can go online. There's different plans you can choose from online. Pick one that you like, modify it, or design your own at that point.
What's a minimum requirement for a coop?
You want to have a nesting area for them to lay their eggs.
That could be just a box, right? A wooden box?
A wooden box with preferably like a little lip in front of it, so that way when they are scratching around and getting comfortable and moving around, they don't knock the eggs out. So just if you can, have a little bit of a lip in front. That way the egg doesn't roll out.
Okay. Nesting box?
Nesting box. You want to have an area for their food and water. You can have a continuous feeder, which means you just pour a whole bunch of food in at once, and then as the chickens eat, gravity will work and it'll start, the feed will just start automatically going down.
And they have that for dogs and cats, don't they?
Mm-hmm, they do. Yeah. So they have it for the chickens as well.
Okay. Do you need a ramp for them to walk up to their nesting box?
If that's how you decide to design it, where your nesting area is up higher, then yes, you would want to have that. Chickens can, they can't necessarily fly like a bird would, like soaring through the air, but they can fly up into low-hanging tree branches, onto fences, so they can get airborne enough to at least get certain areas. So they can't fly.
They can't have sustained flight.
Is it okay to put the nesting box on the ground?
What you want to do is put your nesting box away from the perch where they're going to roost on. You want to keep that away because when they're sleeping on their perch, they will poop. And so you want to keep that stuff away you want to keep the nesting area clean.
So the perch could be a small dowel?
The ideal, what's worked best for us, is that we've used a tree branch. So when the arborist is out pruning the trees, we ask for one of those branches, as long as the tree is healthy, and we are able to use those, and that works really well for the girls. They just need to be able to put their claws around that branch, so it can't be super thick, just enough so that they can, and then they have that interlocking foot, that's how they're able to sleep on those perches.
So they like to go on a perch to sleep, and then they poop. But then they need a nesting box that's kept clean where they will lay their eggs.
Separate from the
separate
area.
Does it need to be nearby, or can it be
like right next to the roost?
I don't know. How close?
It doesn't have to be in close proximity. You can have it in a completely different area. As long as the girls have an area where they can, where it's private, that you have nesting material, which you could use straw, so it's soft. Because when they're setting on, they'll be sitting there, looks like they're meditating, waiting to lay their egg.
Their Zen moment.
Yes, and when it comes time for the egg to actually be released by the hen, she stands up and the egg is dropped. So you need something soft to catch that egg.
Oh, this is so interesting. I guess you can go online and type in chickens laying eggs and see some pictures. I remember my granddaughter, when she was 2 or 3, we went to the zoo. We didn't get very far. We just stayed in the chicken area. She was so fascinated by watching the chickens laying eggs. It's quite amazing.
It is.
I'm going to take a moment for a quick station break. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. You are listening to the In the Garden show, put on by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. Let's get back to Terry Vargas and Lindsay Koop with our interview on backyard chickens, part two. Okay, you were just telling me about the nesting boxes, the perch, and Lindsay, we kind of went on a bird walk here. the cost of setting up chickens.
The chicken coop, yeah. So if you decide to not make your own, you can always go to any local feed store. We've even seen that Costco's and Sam's Club are getting into, and even Williams-Sonoma now we've just heard, is getting into the chicken coop making business. So you can buy a prefab one.
But some of those prefabricated coops tend to be a little small. So realistically, you can't use some of those coops for
maybe small for your 20. How about
for maybe
one or two?
For chicks.
Would it be okay for a few if someone were just starting?
If you could provide at least 8 to 10 square feet per bird, then that would be ideal.
Because that's a good rule of thumb. 8 to 10 feet of chicken coop.
Yes, so that, because they like to play, they like to they need to a space where they can take their baths. They bathe in dirt. Some people provide a container with sand so that they could bathe in there.
So you're saying 8 to 10 feet of free range space.
Yes.
But the coop itself, do you need a nesting box for each chicken?
No. One nesting box per 4 or 5 birds.
Don't they fight for space?
Even if you had 20 boxes, they have their favorite, and they will wait and even pressure the hen that's in the nesting box sitting there. They will go in and peek in, and you know, almost like they're saying, hurry up. It's really funny.
Oh, so I always thought they go to their nesting boxes for the night.
No.
At nighttime when they sleep, they're on their perch.
They're on their perch, yes. You do not, if your bird is sleeping in the nesting box, you need to stop that immediately.
How do you stop that?
You get her out of there. You get her out, and you need to train her and put her on that perch.
They don't do it just naturally?
Well, they do it naturally. But if you have trained them already to go in the in the nesting box, then they're going to do, they're creatures of habit. So they're going to go to that. But that not because you taught them that. Naturally, they're going to go and sleep on the perch.
Oh, so the perch has to be under some kind of cover.
Yes, and actually the run preferably would be under a cover too, because they need protection from the rain. You don't want their coop area getting wet. You want to keep the litter dry.
Okay, we got to get back to Lindsay. Lindsay, describe this coop. I'm picturing the nesting boxes, and mm-hmm. then the pole or branch.
Mm-hmm.
Or
the roost, yes.
I could use even a mopping, an old stick.
That might be a little bit too small for them.
And it's too smooth.
Yeah.
Too smooth. It has to be rough. Okay.
Just a little bit. I mean, not so rough where they're going to get splinters in their feet.
So approximately the length would be what?
As far as the length, it's just as
the perch.
It's as wide as your wherever it is, like the chicken coop. But as far as the width of it.
The diameter,
you probably a couple inches.
Yeah, about a couple inches. But it also, it's going to depend on how many birds you have. If you only have 2 birds, you don't need a very long perch.
You know what I think a good lesson would be is if anyone out there is interested in having chickens, it's a good idea to have a mentor, right?
That's a very good idea.
Because just learning from going to one of your lessons or listening to the radio station or just reading about it may not be enough. You need a one-to-one, someone to hold your hand and walk you through and answer your questions.
And,
right?
Yeah, and the other thing too, Anne, is that that's an excellent idea. And in addition to that, there are some communities that have chicken coop tours, so you can go and take a look at different styles of coops, and that way you can decide, oh, I like this, you know, better than that.
Where's a good place to see one here in Orange County?
Well, they just recently had one in the city of Orange. They had a chicken coop tour, and
Centennial Farms?
Centennial Farm, they actually have a coop there that you can take a look at, and
good.
As an example. And
how about the Great Park?
They have one at the
in
Great
Irvine.
Park also.
Uh-huh.
And if you have a friend that has a chicken, you can take a look at theirs and see what they have.
Okay.
And there are also, if you want to build your own coop, they have books that give different plans that you can take a look at.
Great. And you did mention run, and we didn't talk about a run. Is a run different than an area for them just to free range? What do you mean by a run?
A run is pretty much an area connected to their coop that they can free range, scratch around in, run around. It's just so they're not locked up in that little room, if you will, of their coop.
And remember also that you have vertical space too.
Oh.
So you can use the, especially if you have flighty birds, like an Ancona, for example, they tend to want to roost high, and they like high places. So you can take that into consideration. Be
That's
real creative
right.
with what you have.
That's right. In part one, you talked about a resource, a very handy resource, the book called... what was the book called? The Standard of Perfection?
Yes, the American Standard of Perfection by the American Poultry Association. But they go over, they provide information about the birds that have been recognized by that organization, and they give the standards for the breeding.
Would it tell that?
Ancona. It's a Mediterranean breed.
Bird needs space to go up high.
Well, trying to remember if it does state it on there, but it does say that they are a flighty bird.
Oh,
and
some birds are flightier.
Yes, yeah. And they more of a nervous bird. So if you're wanting a bird that's more docile, I would not go with an Ancona. I would go with a Cochin, for example. They're very docile and fun to. They're easier to tame or work with.
So this American Standard of Perfection would tell some of the personality types
yes,
of these
the
birds?
Temperaments, yes.
The temperaments of
uh-huh.
these birds. Okay, Lindsay, did you want to add something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, too, if someone's looking for a really gentle, docile bird, the Orpingtons are really great. Kids can pick them up. I mean, kids can pick up any of them, too, but they're really heavier birds, and they love to be held. And
Orpingtons.
Yeah,
it's
usually
spelled O-R-P-H?
P-I-N-G-T-O-N, I believe it is.
Orpingtons.
They're from England.
Europe. And they do well in this climate?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking
yes,
of climate, do we have to consider birds for our climate versus birds for up in Washington State or Canada?
We're lucky in Southern California. We have some of the best weather. So
that's right.
We can kind of have the best of all worlds. We can pretty much choose almost any breed that we want to, and it would be okay here. Whereas if we lived in a snowy climate, we would have to choose some of the heavier birds, the heavier feathered birds, too, that would do better in the cold environments. Or if we were in, like, let's say Arizona, we'd have to do some of the lighter Mediterranean birds. So that way we won't have any issues with them.
Right. And if you, for people that are in a colder climate, for those people in California that live in Big Bear area where they get snow, you wouldn't want to get the birds that have those bigger combs because they can get frostbite.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Frostbite in the comb.
Yes.
Wow.
Because those birds were designed for hot weather. The comb, the wattles, which are
uh-huh.
the red
the
fleshy
wattle.
Part that comes down, they have blood vessels in there that help to cool the bird down.
Oh.
And so the ones that have the birds that have the bigger combs.
So they're more native of hot areas.
Hotter climate.
Oh, that's
warmer
interesting.
Climates.
Are we done with what is involved in a chicken coop?
I think so. I was just going to kind of go over, if you're going to buy a pre-made chicken coop from the store, you're looking at a range of, you know, as little as $200 up to close to $500. It really just kind of depends on the size, who makes it, where you buy it from, how big of a coop it is. That's why we always recommend, if you can, make your own, because you can save yourself a lot of money and you can make it how you want it to be. Because a lot of these coops, like we said, that you buy, they're only enough to house maybe two birds at most. And that's even kind of pushing it sometimes, mm-hmm. too, with how small they are. Sometimes with how small they are, they're only good enough to house the chicks. You want to make sure you give your birds enough space to roam around and have fun and be happy.
Let's say I started with a small one and I wanted to enlarge my space. Is it possible to enlarge a smaller coop? Add on rooms? So to speak.
There is ways of doing that. If you are handy, you can. Some of them we have seen, they are a little bit harder to maneuver and to manage, but if you're handy, you can do it.
Yeah, and some people also, and they will build a run so that it encloses that a ready-made coop. And that way, the hens have plenty of space to roam freely, where they're not stressed. But they don't have to focus on building all the details of the nesting box and so forth, and the roost.
Just to go back a little bit, when you were talking about the different types of chickens, earlier you said there are heirloom chickens and hybrid varieties. How does one get the kind of chicken you read about? Let's say, oh, this one sounds, the Orpington sounds like this would be great because I have children, young children, and you want that certain breed. How do you get that particular breed? Let's say you have children and you want the children to see them from the very small chicken incubator stage to the pullet stage to laying egg stage, going through the whole life cycle. How does one get the breed they want?
Well, there are different ways of getting chickens. You can go to your local feed store, and many of the feed stores, you can order a particular, and a lot of them will provide, just by the asking, which breed you want, and they'll let you know if they can get it. And you can contact a breeder that specifically focuses on heritage breeds. So those are made available. And also you can, if you know enough about birds, you can adopt one. So if somebody sometimes people move and they're not able to take their birds, and if you know enough about the birds that you want, and you can go and adopt one.
Ah, so I imagine at a feed store they might have a bulletin board with people who are looking for new owners for their chickens?
Some of them they do, and they also, some of them have a chart where you can, that the hatcheries provide them, that have the different breeds and what they look like as chicks and what they look like as adults, and that way they can take a look at help them decide which they, you know, what they want.
So the trick is to get into that network.
Yes.
Right? It may not be worth the cost of getting an incubator. And
the issue with incubating your own eggs, mm-hmm. is that you don't know if you're going to get a male or female when that chick hatches. Uh-huh. And so if you hatch your own eggs, then what are you going to do with the roosters? A lot of the cities do not allow roosters. Well, actually, all of them, I think, don't allow roosters.
Testing you can. You just have to be, I believe it's 100 feet from your neighbor.
Mm. Okay.
So, yeah.
So what does one do with the rooster?
So if you order from your local feed store, they will usually take them back.
Oh.
The downside is that you've spent these 3-4 months raising this bird, and then you've become attached to it, and then you have to give it up. So
does it take about 4 months before you know the gender of the chicken?
About 3-4 months, and they start to crow.
That's the sign, huh?
Yes. Although, are the females, hens are actually capable of crowing, also physically capable. We've actually had some hens that have crowed, but that tends to be when they start to get older, you know, hormones start to change, and so they start to display those kinds of
crowing hens. And what did you say in the other show?
They were growling.
You had a chicken that growled.
She growls.
They have some identification issues here. Okay, this has been so much fun talking more about chickens. I'm going to just give you free range. I know we've been kind of focusing on the coop and the costs and the care and such. What have we not talked about that you think is important for the public to know?
Yes, I just wanted to point out that when you're setting up their feed containers in the coop, that the feed containers are about, they can hang till about the shoulder length of the chicken so that they're able to reach the feed, but that the feed container is not low to the or on the ground where the hens are scratching and actually getting the
I see
dirt, that the litter material in the food, and they're not pooping.
Children book illustrators need a lesson on chickens because you know the book, The Little Red Hen?
Yes.
you book illustrators don't know this, and they usually have the feed pan on the ground. You're saying that the feeding pan has to be up from the ground so they don't scratch and well, then
the litter ends up inside and stuff. But
I see.
But also, we want to remember, you also want to put some of the feed out, cast it out, so that they can keep them busy.
And you don't want them bored, as you said.
Right, because then
they get stressed.
They can get stressed and picking on each other, and then.
It reminds me when I had a puppy. Our dog trainer said, get cat treats and just throw them around the house. So then when you go to work, the puppy has something to do. It's the same idea, isn't it?
Yes.
You want to keep the chickens busy.
Yes. Having them work for their food. They love it. They want to do it.
That's what they do naturally,
yes.
Right? Yes. Have them forage naturally.
Correct.
And so their feed is actually mixed, right? You spoke about chickens going for the food that their bodies... they sense what their bodies need, but you mix what you're casting out.
You can mix it, and actually in commercial feed, what they tend to do is mill the food, so you can get it in a mash, which is powder form. You can get it in a crumble, and what they've done is they've milled the food together, and then it's been processed, so the girls don't have to pick and choose where. It's like taking a vitamin. They're all the nutrients are right in what they're eating. There are some that do that. We provide them the different seeds, so.
Yeah, the vegetation. You're what we would call the premium caregivers for chickens. the standard, the 5-star. Chickens in your neighborhood know where to go.
Well, they were asking us yesterday when we were over at the Arboretum, what are they eating? And we were explaining to them, well, we make a blend for them that has chia and spirulina and colloidal minerals and on and on. And they're like, wow, they eat better than we do.
I was just thinking. Now, if you let your chickens go free range in your garden, are there some plants you have to worry about? Like, are there plants that are poisonous and people should not be growing them in their yard if they're going to have chickens?
There's a really good resource that covers that topic and will give you has a table that people can refer to, and that's it through Cornell University, their science department, and they have a list of, I'll give you the common names, for example, cabbage, turnips, broccoli, mustard, to name a few. And there's others that are on the list.
Are poisonous to chickens. How about milkweed plants that we like to grow for the butterflies?
They don't have that listed on here, but, and our girls, I'm trying to remember if they've pecked at the milkweed. I don't recall if they have.
One way to find out if any of your plants might be poisonous to the chickens is to go online, and you can go on uccemg.com, and there's an icon there for chicken care, and you can click on it. And even if the master gardener who receives the question doesn't know right away, there's a team of master gardeners who refer questions to each other, and they will find the correct scientifically based answer for any question you have. You can even go on hotline at uccemg.com. You can provide a picture of a question you have about the chicken or about a plant in the garden. I just had someone ask about roses. So any of your gardening issues can be put on the hotline, and you will get an individualized answer. And it always helps to have a picture. You've done such a great job covering this topic on chickens. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, Anne. I'd like to recommend with deep litter method for providing a healthy environment in the coop, and that would be used with several inches of either straw or rice hulls or some type of substrate that will absorb the fecal matter from the hens. And you need to keep it dry and minimize ammonia buildup, because that could create problems for your hens. And also to bring attention to ventilation being a very crucial factor in the coop as well, because that will minimize health concerns with the girls.
This is all important for keeping them free of diseases.
Correct,
right?
Because they are susceptible to diseases, and so there are ways to minimize that, and one being keeping the coop dry, keeping it ventilated, and
free of poop.
And free of poop. However, if you use the deep litter method, you don't have to clean it out on a daily basis. That will, so imagine like a giant composter, that substrate is adhering to the poop, and so it's you have the carbon material with the nitrogen, and it's, as long as you don't have issues with parasites and so forth, then you can just, as long as it's turned, which the girls do naturally, they're scratching in their coop, then you don't have to clean it on a daily basis. Just keep an eye on it and keep it dry. Occasionally you may need to go in there with a pitchfork and stir it up, and you can take a look and see if you have what's called caked litter, where that's stuck together.
Yeah,
that's because of moisture. You don't want that.
If chickens do get sick, do you actually bring them to a vet?
There are some vets that do see chickens. Not all vets are have that experience. And we do have some vets here locally that will see chickens. I know some people that have gone to veterinarians that even are specializing in birds. It just because they specialize in birds doesn't mean that they have experience with chickens. So you really want to make sure that you do some research to find out if the vet that you want to take your bird to has experience with the chickens.
And one more important thing about keeping diseases out is biosecurity, right? You want to explain a little bit about biosecurity.
Yes, biosecurity is a term that's used to describe the practice that you implement in your coop to keep your chickens free from diseases so that they're healthy and safe.
So you don't want to introduce, let's say, other birds?
You don't want to just bring new birds into your coop. You want, if you're going to introduce a bird into your coop that hasn't been an existing part of your flock,
you want to keep them separate, quarantine for, if you can, 3 weeks a month, so that if that bird is a carrier of disease that you cannot see, sometimes they have microorganisms that are pathogens that are can be harmful to your birds. You don't want those you don't want to introduce it to your coop, in your coop, to your girls, and then where it could spread very, very quickly. We use boots specifically for the coop, and we don't take those boots off of the premises. They're specifically for that environment. We don't just let anybody come into our coop. We don't know what they have they're carrying.
There is so much to think about in taking care of chickens. I'm just amazed. So when we earlier said to visit someone who has chickens, these are some of the things you need to be mindful of as well. And not to introduce any kind of pathogens into someone's environment for their chickens.
Yeah, and I just want to remind people that there's microorganisms that you can't see. So you may think, well, I'm not carrying anything, but you might be.
You just never know. I'm almost tempted to tell our listeners we might have a part three.
There's definitely enough information to fill another part three.
Okay, we have 2 minutes. Any lasting memory you want to leave with the listeners out there about backyard chickens? I'll give each of you a turn to do your closing statement. Okay, Terry.
What do I want people to know about chickens? That they're sentient beings. They are sentient beings, and they provide for us an abundance of wonderful things that we can use in our garden, starting with the nitrogen, starting with their pest management. They help us out so much, and I think in return, the least we can do is provide them with optimal care.
Lindsay?
I guess tagging along with that is, yes, treat your chickens right, and they'll treat you right in return, too. They really are fun to watch. They're just as fun to have as a dog or a cat, just as easy to care for as a cat. So why wouldn't you want one, you know, or not one, two? Always remember at least two. They're really great. They're fun to watch. There's drama. There's sports. When they get a bug, you see how athletic they are running around, chasing each other. And they're just so much fun, and they're so rewarding to have.
So listeners out there, you can turn on to the chicken cable station, the live chicken cable station, by just having your own coop. And if you don't have your own coop, that's okay too. Find someone who does and visit them and see how much fun it is, and just share the joy in seeing how chickens contribute to our whole joy of life. Thank you for making the time to come down to the station to do this interview. Terry Vargas and Lindsay Koob, thank you for being the star girls for our UC Master Gardener program.
It was our pleasure, Anne. We really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having us, Anne.
We have come to the close of our show, In the Garden. This is 88.9 FM in Irvine, KUCI. Listen again next week to the In the Garden show. Every week we have a different topic, and you can always check kuci.org to find our past podcasts and listen to them at your convenience. Thank you. Have a great week.